I'd like to thank everyone for tuning in to watch this very important broadcast on doctors who have been fired for telling the truth and the attack on doctors. I think this is an extremely serious issue, because how are we going to have confidence in a medical establishment where doctors aren't able to speak their mind? We need doctors who raise questions and challenge things that the based on their research and knowledge, think are questionable. I think we all can remember, some of us, that there was a time where they used to x-ray the fetus of a pregnant woman. Now, we now know x-rays were a very bad idea, but it had to be doctors who were willing to stand up and say, no, there's something wrong here. So it's very important. And I want to say that I think I'm really honored to be in front of all these courageous doctors who literally put their careers on the line for their belief in the oath that they took to do no harm. So I'm really honored, and we got an all-star cast. I mean, some people are already familiar with the names here, but those who aren't, you will be shortly. All-star cast of doctors, and we have dynamic attorneys here who are defending doctors. So we're going to have a great event. And again, my name is, those who don't know me, I think a lot of you do, Curtis Cost, and I'm the author of the book, Vaccines Are Dangerous. And with that, I'm going to move on to our first speaker. The first speaker tonight is Dr. James Thorpe, OBGYN, and he has an incredible story to tell. So Dr. Thorpe, if you're ready.
Yes, sir. Thank you so much, Curtis, for pulling this off. Awesome. My name is Dr. Jim Thorpe, and I am an OBGYN board certified and board certified subspecialist of OBGYN maternal fetal medicine specialist. I've been seeing high risk OB for 44 years now. I graduated from medical school in 1979. And I have been employed. I was employed by SSM Health of St. Louis, and I was terminated on January 29th. I'm extensively published. I've testified multiple times in the United States Senate and other state senates, and been speaking out on this for some time. Thank you. So basically, what happened was the CEO called me up for 45 minutes. He spoke with me on June 29th, Thursday at 1:05 p.m., and my wife was present, an attorney, for the entire conversation on my side. The CEO, his name was Kevin Ellidge, praised me and honored me for 30 minutes, called me a, quote, model physician of the system. He congratulated me for my professional intellectual and my integrity in terms of my ethics and morality. And several people, multiple sources inside, informed me over the past several years that I'm by far and away the number one producer for the entire department. So they were allegedly terminating me for no cause. And so they gave me the option of taking a large sum of money and signing a contract and to be done with it, or continue to work for another 120 days. I declined the money. I didn't want their money. I felt a lot of pressure to take the money. I refused it. And 7 minutes after the phone call ended, sent an email out to the entire system telling them that I was fired of my clinical responsibilities, effective immediately, implying a causal relationship. I was very disturbed today when my wife, investigative attorney, Maggie M. Thorpe, great sleuth, we found the jackpot today. SSM Health took $135 million from the HHS and CDC in early 2021. No doubt, they signed the exact same, what I refer to as the covenant of death, that the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists signed, which dictates that they never deviate, no matter what their outcomes are, they never deviate from the death narrative, HHS and CDC.
Can you give us an idea of what was happening that caused you to get very concerned about the protocols. I know with regards to pregnant women and the vaccine. Could you share with us what you found and how were you trying to get that information out there? What sparked them to want to do this to you?
Well, I mean, you know, I was in the United States Senate testifying. I was on Tucker Carlson. I've been on hundreds and hundreds of public platforms, and I've been preaching the truth that it was the, according to Pfizer, the deadliest drug ever rolled out to the public in the history of medicine. And they didn't square up with it. They didn't tell the world that. What did they do instead? They doubled down through the former Assistant Deputy Secretary of HHS, Mr. Mark Weber. His brainchild was, instead of telling the American people and the world the truth, no, we're going to suppress the truth for 75 years, and we're going to roll out a $13 billion unprecedented PSYOPs campaign to the entire American people, including 300 influencing organizations, and really sending the message to the entire world that I will call it an experimental gene therapy, was safe, effective, and absolutely necessary in all pregnant women, period. That's what they did. All these influencers signed that contract, which I refer to as the covenant with death. So I've been blasting that out.
What has been happening to pregnant women who've taken the COVID vaccine? Can you give us
First of all, it's devastating. When they're trying to get pregnant, they can't get pregnant or have great difficulty, substantial increase in menstrual abnormalities, substantial increase in infertility, both male and female. If they do get pregnant, a massive increase in miscarriage, fetal malformations, fetal death, severe early onset preeclampsia, severe fetal growth restriction, severe placental abnormalities, including placental infarcts and multiple other extensive placental pathology. We have severe early onset preeclampsia, preterm premature rupture membranes, preterm labor, and preterm delivery. Spontaneous preterm delivery has increased, and indicated preterm delivery due to the complications from the vax. And premature delivery resulting in newborn deaths.
Thank you. Just help me if I got this right. Hasn't it been a policy not to give experimental drugs to pregnant women? Is that correct or not?
That's absolutely 100% correct. Not only a policy, that's the golden rule of pregnancy for six millennia. You don't need to be a doctor or a nurse or a healthcare administrator to know that. Our creator endowed us with that knowledge. All people know that. All people know that you don't take novel substances in pregnancy. You don't drink a glass of wine. You don't smoke a cigarette. You don't eat certain fish, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. This is absolute insanity. But 61,000 OBGYN doctors under the umbrella of the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists are essentially bribed. They are threatened. If they speak out, they will be personally destroyed like they're doing to me and like they've done to all the rest of this illustrious panel here tonight.
Thank you very much, Dr. Thorpe, for your tremendous insights and courage. I'd like to move on to the next speaker, Dr. Andrew Wakefield. Those in our movement know who he is and the tremendous challenges he faced for telling the truth. So I'll just let him explain what happened. Dr. Wakefield, are you ready?
Great to be here, Curtis. Thank you very much. Privileged to be in this company. I'm an academic gastroenterologist, trained in London, graduated in 1981. Became a fellow of the Royal College of Surgeons, fellow of the Royal College of Pathologists, published 150 scientific papers before my career came crashing down. I started investigating vaccine concerns, particularly in the context of measles-containing vaccines in 1990. And then in 1995, parents came to me whose children had regressed into autism in the face of MMR vaccine. They weren't anti-vaccine. They'd taken their children to be vaccinated. But they were merely reporting what had happened to their children, and no one knows a child like their mother. And my training in medicine was to listen. That is the art of medicine. And to act appropriately. And that is what I tried to do. I organized a team of researchers to look at this, including some of the most eminent gastroenterologists in the world. We confirmed exactly what the parents had said, everything I'd learned about autism from my colleagues in child psychiatry was completely wrong. Everything I learned from the parents was absolutely right. However, the dean called me in one day and said, if you continue this vaccine safety research, it will not be good for your career, which kind of, you know, as a surgeon, that made me double down and work twice as hard. But he was absolutely right in as much that it was not good for my career. Professor of medicine called me in one day. I didn't know at the time that he was heavily funded by the biggest MMR manufacturer in Europe, GlaxoSmithKline. And he told me I no longer formed part of the future of his department. He said he didn't like my science. I said, what of the papers have we written on this? What have you ever read? He said, I don't need to. So he had this preternatural wisdom handed down to him from the Lord that entitled him to judge the science I'd been producing without ever having read it. I later learned that he'd actually entered into a bribe with a senior scientist at the Scripps Institute to deliberately destroy, to contaminate a collaborative experiment that we had with the University of California. That was when I realized that things were going very, very badly wrong. And I came to America and I continued the work until they finally destroyed what I was trying to do here. At that point, over the years, many, many people had come to me from industry or from the regulatory agencies like the Department of Health, the CDC, FDA, and said, we've done a terrible thing here. Is the evidence. And I became a repository for whistleblowers and decided after a while that these were best articulated in film and presented to the people. You can help one child at a time in the clinic, but you can change the minds of millions of people if you make films with integrity, honesty, and the truth. And that's what I now do. I would say that for the people here and for those listening, I've been in this for a very long time, and people who've come to this, certainly in the wake of COVID, may feel that we're in a very dark time. There's no doubt that we are, but let me characterize it this way. Coming from 30 years ago, when I started this work, when I got involved in it, there were literally a handful of people worldwide who were prepared to deal with the thorny issue of vaccine safety. Now that is more than half the adult population of the world, and that has happened for a number of reasons. Not which of people, you know, people are sustaining their own personal injuries or injuries in their families or becoming aware through films like Vaxxed and others, but clearly COVID has had a massive amount to do with this. And we now realize just how deep and how dark and how corrupt the system is. And so they are the architects in there at the end of their own destruction. We are winning. It may not look like winning. It's certainly very uncomfortable, but that is where we are now compared to where we were then. And one can only hope that someone assumes the role of President of the United States of America who actually cares about this without naming any names. But I do believe that we have a great opportunity now. We need to exploit that. It is time for courage, global courage, not just a few individuals such as those who are on this call. But we have to choose the hill on which we're prepared to die. And this, for me, is certainly that. Hill. I cannot stand by and watch these children being permanently damaged at all in the face of something that is completely avoidable.
Absolutely fantastic. Great words from a great man. Thank you very much, Dr. Wakefield. I'd like to move on to Dr. Paul Thomas, who also has a phenomenal story to tell, and I'll let him speak for himself. So, Dr. Thomas, are you ready?
I am indeed. Thank you for having me on. It is a privilege to be on with all of you and to follow my hero, Andy Wakefield. So, Andy, you are responsible for my demise.
mine too.
I read your paper, the seminal paper you wrote about MMR and the findings in those 9 or 10 kids with autism. And I thought, wow, vaccines can cause harm. And you didn't say that. You just said perhaps. And that was all you had to do to be crucified and ultimately lose your license. But I also heard you speak at DAN conferences, Defeat Autism Now conferences. And I was in awe of the power of your scientific wisdom, knowledge, the breadth of that knowledge, and how you stood firm despite all the persecution. And I remember asking you personally, how do you stay so positive? And your eloquent answer had something to do with the fact that it's not about us. This is all about the kids and the moms and those who are suffering from all this craziness. So anyway, I digress, but I wanted to thank you for leading the charge. The Urban Dictionary has a term, Wakefielded, and you can look it up. We've been Wakefielded, everybody that's going to be speaking tonight. You charged a trail for us and showed us what it is to be courageous, to be honest, and to be ethical. And thank you for that. I went to Dartmouth Medical School, was taught everything I knew about vaccines, which was very little. And I was never told anything that was in a vaccine, just how to give it and when to give it. Residency, board certified for 30 years. In the 2000s, shortly after reading your paper, Andy, and then attending some Defeat Autism Now conferences, I woke up, especially after I had four kids in a row regress into autism and severe nonverbal autism who had been normal. And these were in my practice. These weren't just kids I heard about. I saw it with my own eyes. And there was no turning back. So I left my partners. Well, actually, I was shown the door. They said it was unethical not to follow the CDC schedule. And I said, it is unethical to inject hepatitis B into newborns who don't need it. It's unethical to give the MMR at age one when we have the data that Andy had presented, et cetera, et cetera. So I came up with a slower schedule. We called it the vaccine-friendly plan, that book right there behind me. By the way, it's not friendly enough, folks. The medical board started coming after me and trying to discredit the data that was in that book. They said, prove that the vaccine-friendly plan is as safe as the CDC schedule. So I got somebody to help me get the data from every baby born into my practice, and we actually published it in this International Journal of Public Health. Some of you have seen this article. The orange lines are the vaccinated, the blue lines are the unvaccinated. Incredible real-world data with 2,700 partially vaccinated. Those were actually vaccine-friendly plan vaccinated kids, folks, and 561 unvaxxed. For every single health outcome we looked at, the unvaxxed were 4 to 5 times healthier, 400 to 500% less asthma, ADD, eczema, ear infection, sinusitis. It doesn't matter what we looked at. This is huge, folks, because you see, doctors and the public are not aware that most of the chronic conditions in our children and probably in the adult population as well are highly significantly related to the vaccine schedule, to the toxins in the vaccines, to the immune activation that occurs. It's too many, too soon, and we've never looked. We just say they're safe and effective, end of story, and we just add more and more and more to the schedule. So I got a call from the medical board. Most of you on this call probably have had this sort of call. Jim, you were mentioning your call. My attorney says, you cannot go to the office. You can't talk to any patients. You can't practice medicine. The board has emergently suspended your license. You are a threat to public health. This was 3 days after that paper was published and available online. That was their response. I just have to say that fast forward 6 months later, I was reinstated because they forgot to file charges. They emergently took my license illegally without filing any charges. It was reinstated, but I was forced to sign these stipulations. And it's very telling to what's important to the medical boards. I was not allowed to talk about vaccines to patients or my staff, and I was not allowed to do clinical research on my patients. You see, I was sitting on a goldmine of data. And in our town in Portland, Oregon, most of the practices would kick patients out of the practice if they don't follow the CDC schedule. Well, where do those people go? They go to my practice. It's closed now. I'm retired. But Integrative Pediatrics, we honored informed consent, and we would take anybody in our practice. So over those 10 to now 13 years that that practice was open, I was in this unique position of having more and more unvaccinated kids. And what was I seeing? The healthiest kids you've ever seen. My well waiting room was packed. My sick waiting room was empty. It was something I'd never seen before. I was used to having ear infections, sinus infections, lung infections, asthma, eczema, you name it. Kids are sick these days, not when they're unvaxxed. So that was a fascinating revelation. It led to that publication. And there have been since other publications. There are several vaxxed unvaxxed studies. There's a vaxxed unvaxxed book coming out this month. The world is on notice that vaccines are causing enormous harm. And so You know, that's the gist of my story. I am suing the medical board just because they deserve to be sued for what they've done. Who knows if that'll reach the Supreme Court or what'll happen. But we have to stand by. You know, COVID indeed has opened our eyes because they really went all in on a horrible, horrible product. Unbelievable that they could pull that off. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Dr. Thomas. I know we went over time, but it's okay because it was great information. So there's flexibility here. Thank you so much. I should move on to Dr. Renata Moon. Are you ready?
Yes, thank you for having me on.
Great.
So I'm the daughter of parents who fled to the United States after escaping from their communist homeland. And so I was born here, worked hard, went to a top U.S. medical school, became a pediatrician. And so I've practiced pediatric medicine for over 25 years. I am board certified in both pediatric hospital medicine and general pediatrics, extensive experience in the hospital setting with really sick children, as well as in the clinic setting. I most recently have also, actually for my whole career, have worked as a professor of medicine. So I've taught medical students and residents in about three different medical schools around the U.S. So I've done both clinical and academic work. And so I'm highly experienced. And I just want to share that I really trusted these regulatory agencies, much like I think many of our colleagues out there have for our whole careers, right? So we trusted them. And I early on, when I saw the rotavirus vaccine pulled, the original rotavirus vaccine was pulled over less than 100 cases of a rare intestinal problem that really none of us were seeing. But they pulled it. The regulatory agencies pulled it from the market, cited, you know, the fact that less than 100 children had had an issue with this, and they wanted to study it further. And it didn't come back on the market again for years. So I really trusted these agencies. And it took me until this COVID situation to really open my eyes. And I think, like Dr. Thomas just said, the COVID situation really opened many, many eyes. I'm currently getting phone calls from many pediatricians around the country who are waking up, just like I have, to what has happened. I woke up to this several years ago and began to really question the COVID shots for children. The only way I know to prevent a child from having an adverse reaction to the COVID shot 100% is to not give it to them, right? And this is an illness that causes kids, that gives them a 99.997% survival rate. So they have a statistical 0% risk of a fatality from this illness. I began to question the obvious, you know, question of why. Why are we giving this to our nation's children when it is completely experimental? We have alarming short-term data. There's no sense in going, we don't have even time to go into all of it here, but we all know what we're talking about. And we have no idea what the long-term consequences are. And these kids are essentially a 0% risk of this infection killing them. So I began to question that. And the more I looked at the data, the more alarmed I was. I personally never ordered the COVID-19 shot for any of my patients. I never recommended it to them. The data was clear right from the start. This should never have been given to our nation's children. There was no emergency for our nation's children. And this product is dangerous and unsafe for many of our nation's children. So I began to question that, and I began to speak out. Now, like the other physicians here tonight, they came down on me. I've been pro-vaccine my entire career. I have trusted these regulatory agencies. I was not someone who would have been labeled as anti-vax at all. That would be laughable, okay? I trusted these regulatory agencies. I've always had patients in my practice who, you know, some parents chose to immunize, some parents chose not to. And I supported the decision that parents made. I never kicked people out of my practice or kept them from coming to see me for traditional childhood vaccines or anything like that. But here I was questioning it. So for the last several years, I've been speaking out publicly. And what happened to me in terms of my job loss is complicated. And I don't have time to get into all the details tonight. But I will say that I was invited at one of those events. I was invited to speak in Washington, D.C. in December of 2022 at the request of a U.S. senator. So a U.S. senator was holding a fact-finding hearing on Capitol Hill in Washington, D.C., where he invited people from all different areas, financial, Department of Defense, medicine, and he invited us to come speak. So I flew out to Washington, D.C. on my own expense, and I flew out on my own personal time. I wasn't there representing any entity. I was certainly not there representing my medical school. I took personal leave from my medical school to attend the hearing and to speak. And I spoke about my concerns. In March of this year, I received a memo from the medical school specifically citing that event, the event in December that the U.S. senator had held. And they were upset that I had spoken there. The memo now has gone live, so you can look at it online. But the fourth and the fifth points of that memo, to someone like me whose parents escaped from political persecution, is particularly chilling. The fourth point of that memo says that it is the ethical obligation of the school to report my words at that fact-finding event in Washington, D.C. to the state medical commission because I, quote, may have spoken things that were wrong or misinformation, okay? It's particularly chilling. They basically are threatening to report me to the Ministry of Truth. It's like out of some sort of Orwellian dystopian novel, right? And then the fifth portion of that memo says that I may no longer be suited to teach the medical students of that school because I don't follow the evidence, or it implies that I don't follow the evidence. So this memo was issued. And then at the end of June, actually, Dr. Thorpe and I share the same day. On June 29th, we both had our jobs terminated over this, apparently. So I don't know what time yours happened. Maybe it was the same moment. But on June 29th, I received another memo from my dean and chairman telling me that my annual faculty contract would not be renewed at the school, thereby effectively terminating my employment. So the way they do this is you have an annual faculty employment letter that you sign. So every year they can purge you. Now, my parents under communism watched this happen. My mom was in an adjacent room when a faculty member, one of her professors, at the time she was in college, she watched that professor be berated by other professors who came for him. They came from an adjacent room, and they were mad at him because he had been speaking the truth about genetics, about Mendelian genetics. They removed him from that school when she was under communism, and she never saw him again. So we are in the same type of situation. History is absolutely repeating itself. The concern we all share is, what does this teach our future physicians? What does this type of behavior teach other faculty? It teaches all of us that they are trying to silence us. They are trying to threaten us. And they are trying to purge us from institutions of higher learning, from our clinical work. They're trying to get us to a point where we all work in lockstep with one another and do what they tell us to do. These agencies and these pharmaceutical companies and these corporations are so massively, massively infiltrated with corruption that, you know, picture what this world will look like if we let this continue. They came after me for speaking words on my own personal time at the request of a U.S. senator. And if they can do that, then I would ask you, do we still have a U.S. Constitution anymore? Do we? And the only answer I have to this is we all need to continue speaking out and we need to fix this. We cannot have a world where we simply do what the pharmaceutical companies and the corporations tell us to do with regard to patient care. And that's it. And we have no other choice. We cannot have a world like that moving forward. So thank you for allowing me to speak.
Thank you very much. That was absolutely phenomenal, as all the other presentations. Thank you. Moving on to the next speaker, Dr. Michael Hahn. Dr. Hahn, are you available?
Yep, I'm here.
Okay, feel free. By the way, I saw a YouTube video he put out, and I was just blown away. So I did everything I could to be able to get him on this this forum. So, Dr. Hahn, feel free.
My name is Michael Hahn. I'm a family practitioner here in Northern California. So I am the blue-collar worker in medicine. So I'm at the front line. I was a also, unfortunately, at the front line of the socialism movement here in California. In March 2020, when Gavin Newsom, our governor, issued a lockdown, stay-at-home order, I said to my staff, we as a nation have been brought down to our knees with our enemy, be it foreign or domestic, fire one shot. What I meant is I saw this coming over 3 years ago. I'm from Taiwan. My family are from China. My grandparents fought the Japanese and the communist Chinese during World War II. So I know what socialism is. I know what communism is. I know what it means to lose the ability to speak freely. And I saw that coming. I already started treating COVID or COVID-like patient in the fall of 2019. So I'm familiar with what this disease is. It affects mostly the old and not young. I had two decisions I can make. I could either sit idle, not do anything, just like 99.9% of physicians in America, or I could treat and practice my art. I'm a professional. In 2020, it was completely quiet. I saw very, very few COVID patients. Once the vaccination program began, the crap just hit the fan. I started seeing 5, 10, 20, 30 COVID patients a day. I ended up seeing more than 4,000 COVID patients in the past 3 years. And my treatment success rate was 100%. When I say 100%, no one died under that was treated by me. My hospitalization rate, or prevent the patient from going to the hospital, was 99.99%. That means I only had a handful of patients ended up at the hospital. I never once used monoclonal antibody. I never once used any type of IV therapy. I used the medicine that I know that works, that reduce inflammation. And sometimes I will use ivermectin, and I only use hydroxychloroquine once. So I know my art. I know my profession. As a result, I became very well known in the community. People started to reach out to me when kids were required to wear masks for more than 1 year. So I started seeing few family coming to me for mask exemptions. It turned from few kids one day to 500 kids in 1 month. I was instrumental in help reversing mask requirement for kids in school in a couple of my county and school by where I live. And when the vaccine became a mandate to be employed, to go to college, go to school, again, few people reach out to me for exemption. And I saw a few, couple of days. In a week, it became 100. In a month, it became 1,000. And since then, I have provided over 4,000 to 5,000 vaccine exemption for over 500 firefighters, over 200 nurses, countless number of physicians. And it was a sobering experience. I do have to say that the things I went through is something I always ask myself. I'm a history buff. What would I do if I was one of the ordinary Germans during World War II? When my neighbor come knocking on my door, saying, please help me because I'm Jewish. They're going after me and my family. What will I do? So I was put in this situation. What would I do as an ordinary man in this extraordinary situation? I decided to act. I decided to protect the people that's in my community. I decided to treat. And as a result, because I'm in California and heavily attacked, I was featured on several local news and also nationally, internationally, and the board went after me. So I have 30 complaints in the board against me, and I have a lot in common in many of you in this discussion. My practice was closed on June 30th. So as a result, but I don't regret it. This is something that's extraordinary. I felt blessed. I was given this opportunity to help more than 10,000 people through this COVID crisis. And I acted. We do have to, when I'm training junior residents, junior physicians, when they come to me with an issue or problem, I always ask them, okay, great. I know that you have a problem. What's your solution of fixing this issue? I don't want to just hear about your complaint. So my suggestion for all of us that has faced these trial and tribulation is do whatever you can to fight it. When I became a US citizen, I took an oath not to protect the special interests of Pfizer or Moderna, but to protect the Constitution. What's the first thing on the Constitution? Freedom of speech. So I had the first dance with California Medical Board before COVID. They accused me of doing something where I consulted the family and telling them that their kids not sick, they are not sick from mold infection. And I decided to speak the truth and I was punished. But I decided to fight and I actually won against the medical board, which was very, very rare. So I had the warning shot and I had the practice of what the legal system is like, what the medical board is like. So our country, as far as America goes, I know this is an international forum, but in America, our history seems to turn and change every 80 years. You go from great to horrible. So we're at the end of that 80-year term. What can we do to make it better? If you can help one person, do it. If you can help 10, that's even better. I was fortunate to help more than 10,000 people. And I feel extremely blessed. It's going to take a lot more than just the presenter here in this forum to reverse a trend. It's going to take a lot more than RFK Jr. to lead a nation. It's going to take every one of us. And I will never forget this. I was able to help one school overturn the mass exemption, not because of me. It's because all the kids in the school, more than 50 of them decided not to wear masks. They were pulled out of their lunch line, not given food to eat. They were basically denied the ability to use bathroom and restroom when they need to go. But they still fast. These are kids with real courage. And I constantly reminded of that, of what we need to do as an individual. So what I did and the contribution I made, in addition to treating COVID patients, providing exemptions, and also treating hundreds of vaccine-injured patients, is I also ran for a political position. I ran for state senate in California. I had a greater platform to get a war out there to protect our liberty and our freedom and also defend our constitution. So this fight is now over. I think, like many of you, I'm older, I'm almost 60. What I worry about is not me, it's about our children. When I was running for state senate, sometimes I get asked, why are you doing this? Don't you know that you'll be under attack? I say, yes, I know, and I am being attacked. If I don't do this, in another 20, 30 years, my children will be on the same platform, pleading to you to protect our constitution, to protect our liberty. Your grandchildren will be standing here exactly what I am to try to do the right thing and protect our freedom and medical autonomy. So that's what I had to share. And I will encourage every one of you to continue to fight on and don't give up.
Fantastic. Thank you very much. I mean, it's moving, even though I'm trying to be objective, to hear all these presentations. They're just phenomenal. And I know it's going to have a big impact on all the people who are going to end up seeing this. But thank you very much, Dr. Wan. Sure. Moving on to the next speaker, Dr. Susan Downs. Dr. Downs, are you ready?
Just a second. Yeah. I'm boarded in integrative medicine, and I'm a psychiatrist both in the U.S. and the U.K. I have a naturopathic doctor degree and 3 master's degrees, Stanford, MIT, and president of the Silicon Valley Health Institute. I worked in the emergency room at UCSF for 25 years. Recently, I had gotten an award and my name went on a plaque. But in October, 2021, I think it was, the mandates came out. So I had a valid religious exemption given to me by UCSF but the city of San Francisco said I was not allowed to go into the building. Well, the annual renewal came around and I lost my job. So also, I had made a movie called The Big Secret. It's all about nutrition. And I was shocked 4 years ago that Congressman Adam Schiff censored it. He took my film and 79 other films off Amazon Prime. Why does Adam Schiff, you don't not want us to know about nutrition? Why do you not want us as citizens to know how to improve our health? Other films that were taken down, for example, was Brzezinski's film, who's a physician in Texas that was successfully treating many cancer patients. So why is free speech being censored? So I wanted to explore this a little bit. So I made a movie called The Big Secret. The Big Secret, I learned that there are many physicians that were successfully treating COVID in the early stages. Had they not been censored, we could have saved 85, 90% of the deaths. What does that mean? Well, the emergency authorization that took place in many countries would have been illegal. We never would have had these lockdowns that basically destroy a lot of people and, you know, the middle class, and they end up being dependent on the government. It's questionable why were churches closed down and liquor stores and big box stores open. But what was the censorship all about? Censorship typically leads to totalitarianism. When does it not? Science is an evolving process spurred on by debate and discovery. Why are doctors being censored? Does censorship ever stay in one area? I've seen Homeland Security memos saying that anybody that says anything that makes the government look bad is a terrorist. I think we're losing free speech. In California, Law 2098, that if we tell our patients anything that disagrees with what's approved by the mother government, we lose our licenses. So anyway, in my movie, Something Ain't Right, it's narrated by Kevin Sorbo, it's very interesting how things are going in lockstep. In April 2021, memos came out, at least in Australia, Canada, and the U.S., that doctors that prescribe early treatment are subject to losing their license. Now, that's what we doctors do. We experiment. It's a spiritual thing. We work with our patients and we try to find something to help them. We don't just say, well, wait till you're sick and go to the hospital when you're almost ready to die. So anyway, then shortly thereafter, it came out that doctors even talk about it lose their license. And this was going on in every state. Dr. Peter McCullough was saying it was going on in many different places. Even in Africa, stores of hydroxyquinine were burned by some kind of, you know, secret forces. So anyway, this doesn't look like one thing we need to be aware of is our president in the U.S. seems to be pushing for a treaty in which WHO takes control over all of our health decisions and doesn't seem to be drawing much interest. But if WHO performs like it had in the past and censorship is a part of this, where is this going to lead? Do we want this? Why aren't the government scientists taking up Steve Kirsch's offer of $1 million to just debate the science? Science is something that we learn, we change, we discover. And Adam Schiff, why are your cronies censoring us? In closing, I'd like to cite a poem by Martin Niemöller, which was pre-World War II in Germany. First, they came for the socialist, and I did not speak out. I'm not a socialist. Then they came for the trade unionist. I did not speak out. I'm not a trade unionist. Then they came for the Jews, and I did not speak out because I'm not a Jew. Then they came for me, and there's no one left to speak for me.
Very impactful. Thank you very much, Dr. Downs. Great information, like from everyone else here. Thank you very much. Moving on to the next speaker, Dr. Daniel Negassi. Are you there? Are you ready?
Hi, can you guys hear me all right?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. Wow, I am so honored to be on this panel because I haven't done 0.1% of what the rest of the panel has done. So I'm very, very honored to be amongst you. My story in brief was I'm an emergency doctor, started off as an urban emergency doctor. And after a few years, I moved on to rural emergency medicine because it was more difficult and challenging to save lives when you don't have ample hospital resources, the latest equipment and specialists everywhere. So one day, it was September 11th, 2021, I was in a small hospital where I never worked before called Rimby Hospital in Alberta, Canada. And there was three critically ill elderly patients, two in their mid-70s, one in her mid-90s. They all had crackles from the bases of their lungs to the apices. They were all in the COVID ward, struggling to breathe. And I realized, you know what, unless I do something, all three are going to end up on mechanical ventilators. Now, by the fall of 2021, the extreme mortality rate with COVID pneumonia following mechanical ventilation was well known. So I gave each of the three patients a dose of ivermectin. 18 hours later, there was a clinical recovery. The crackles were gone. Like, I've never seen anything work that fast. 18 hours after 0.5 milligrams per kilogram of ivermectin PO, their lungs were clear. Now, I gave a few other things like Ventolin, Flovent, Pulmicort, just standard therapies that we've given for decades in viral pneumonias. And I also gave vitamin C and B and zinc. Now, the next day, September 12th, 2021, I lost my job. And all the work assignments that I had scheduled for the rest of the year throughout Alberta, in all the small rural hospitals, all my work assignments were canceled. So after I was canceled, it actually expanded my life quite a bit because now I got to talk about all the knowledge I had about the dangers of mRNA injections because I did a cell biology and physiology degree at McGill. That was from 1995 to 1999. So from the moment they announced mRNA, I started chatting with the nurses and the doctors I worked with. It's like, hey, you know, mRNA is pretty dangerous stuff. It hasn't been used in people before. You should wait and see what the side effects are before jumping on this bandwagon. There's extreme likelihood, extreme danger of genotoxicity, autoimmunity. What are you doing? Getting your own cells to produce an antigen that you're supposed to produce an antibody to? That's a really risky, you know, cellular procedure, getting your own body to produce antigens that your own body fights. That's begging for autoimmune disease. And then with mRNA technology and the existence of reverse transcriptase, which has been known since the 70s, it's extreme risk for cancer. Genetic alteration, integration of mRNA transcripts reverse transcribed into the DNA. So this is a potentially species-changing event, giving everyone mRNA injections. And, you know, like I would very tactfully and discreetly, you know, offer my thoughts to my coworkers. And for the most part, they were like, oh, yeah, Daniel, you're such a nerd. You have your degree from McGill, there, you know. And then they would ignore me. So being fired in a way was a blessing because I got to talk about and I got to share the knowledge that I had acquired when I was an undergrad at McGill. I got to share my knowledge about mRNA. And, you know, my first really big public speech about that was in November 3rd, 2021, about a month and a half after I got fired. And what amazed me is that the speed at which deep state and controlled opposition jumped on me. I'm just like a nobody emergency doctor in Canada, right? And all of a sudden I was on a Zoom call with Robert Malone and Malone was telling me, don't talk about reverse transcription and DNA integration. Like, wow, what hornet's nest did I just step on? And so this is the interesting thing is, you know, people ask me, when did I first wake up? The first time I woke up was actually September 11th, 2001. And that was when the Twin Towers went down. And I thought, oh, that doesn't look right. That doesn't look like an airplane crash. And ever since then, I've kept an eye out for the other side of the news, the narratives that aren't being shared on mainstream media. And, you know, over 20 years, I accumulated quite a bit of very interesting knowledge. Now, that interesting knowledge combined with my habits of thought as an emergency doctor. So my philosophy as an emergency doctor is, if you don't find the source of the problem, you're not really solving the problem. So it led to a habit and pattern of thought where, A, I was always looking for the source of the problem. I would never stop looking until I found the actual cause. The second thing that I learned from emergency doctoring is to not believe or have faith in a particular diagnosis. The reason being, those two words, belief and faith, tend to stop further questioning. So being a simple emergency doctor who tries to get problems solved fast, I simply divided everything, all the information that came into me and my thought process into what do I know and what do I not know. I might think something, I might suspect something, but until I really know it, do I really know it? So those two words disappeared from my thought process after decade and a half of emergency doctoring. I no longer believed in diagnosis. I no longer had faith in things. It just ended up in the category of my mind where I don't know, and I have to do further questions and thought to find it out. So that combined with 20 years of conspiracy knowledge led me to really search hard, why is this occurring? Why is this tyranny coming across all of medicine, across the entire world?
1 minute.
What is the root cause of everything that we've seen over the past 3 years? And to me, it seems like it was fear. I wanted to end on that. Thanks very much.
Thank you very much, Dr. Ngasi. Absolutely fascinating. It's always great to see people who look below the surface at the real cause of problems and the other things that you raised. Thank you. We're going to make a little shift now from the doctors speaking to the lawyers. We have a fantastic lawyer, Brett Dacus, and his law firm has been doing phenomenal things in helping doctors with some of the problems they've been encountering, such as presented here. So, Brett, are you ready? No. Okay. Brett, are you there?
Yes, I am. I'm here.
Okay, great. Feel free.
Okay, thank you very much. Yes, first, it's a great privilege to be here. I don't want to be too repetitious, but it is an honor to be with all the other participants, it's a delight to be able to participate. My name is Ry Dacus. I founded the Pacific Justice Institute back in 1997 to defend religious freedom, freedom of conscience, parents' rights over their children, and the sanctity of human life, all without charge. We now have 32 offices in 24 states, coast to coast. We have the largest footprint of its kind compared to any other similar organization doing similar work. We also are unique in that we don't just cherry pick a few high profile, big precedent cases. Our goal is to make sure that everyone gets help, that no one's left on the side of the road. Well, needless to say, when we got hit with the shutdowns of the churches and synagogues across America, we were very strategic. We took a case all the way to the United States Supreme Court, got an emergency writ, ordering Governor Gavin Newsom of California open those churches and synagogues right away. And this was very important from a civil liberties perspective because everything else was open. The pot shops, the strip clubs, restaurants, but not places of worship. And we began to see this in the blue states, not in the red states. And we saw a clear political, non-scientific, non-medical justification. And that was a big warning sign. That case sent ripples across the country and helped us reverse that tidal wave of oppression. But then we had a second tidal wave, and that was dealing with these countless numbers of people being told that they're going to lose their jobs, including doctors and nurses, unless they take the jab. We stepped up and we led the charge, led the nation in litigation all across the country, a classic In fact, just we have right now over 100 cases dealing with people wrongfully terminated, of individuals, of classes. One case deals with about 1,000 employees suing the city of San Francisco. We have another large group suing state of New York and also the city of New York and many places in between, being told to compromise between their conscience to take a jab that they don't agree with, that they don't believe in, versus lose their job and be marked for the rest of their lives from that occupation potentially. We've been very aggressive. We have all these cases all across the country. Classic was Children's Hospital of Orange County. A lot of doctors and nurses, RNs, were demonstrating because they were being told, we're going to treat you differently. You're going to have to get the jab. And this one person, this one nurse who's an RN came up to me, and I was out there, and they were demonstrating, doctors and nurses. She said with tears in her eyes, she said, I can't take the jab. My husband and I were trying to have a baby. I'm trying to get pregnant. I can't take the jab. And now we know, based on the stats, as was mentioned earlier, how right she was. Well, we prevailed. One of our star attorneys, Todd Watkins, did a great job on that case. Ascension Health was another entity, a huge entity that fired and laid off so many people because of doctors and medical professions. We got their jobs back, and we're actually still in litigation challenging them. Our offices are working together in coordination with the second largest medical institution in the United States. Contra Costa was one of several school districts in California that wanted to force all the children in the school district to take the jab. So we at Pacific Justice, our chief counsel, Kevin Snyder, we went into court and we got it halted and protected every single one of those children from being given the COVID-19 vaccine or vaccination, one of the vaccines. Now we know how critically important that is in terms of statistics and survivability and long-term health complications that could have resulted. We still have a lot of people in the medical profession wanting to go to nursing school. Problem is some nursing schools at universities are saying, oh no, you don't have the jab. We're not gonna let you go to nursing school. We're not gonna let you go to your residency. Even if the hospital doesn't require it, we're gonna disqualify you because you're not taking the jab. This is outrageous. We have some colleges, universities in California where it's the universities themselves are saying, you're not vaccinated, you can't even be in the program, don't even bother, because we only work with hospitals that are requiring the jab. And that's a real problem. We have a lot of people in the military we've been helping. Out of our Philadelphia office, we have a military law expert. She's doing an absolutely fantastic job. She told me between 500 and 700 people in the military to keep them from being discharged, dishonorably discharged specifically, but just discharged from the military. And we've been going to bat for them. It's so important. It's absolutely insane when you think about how this has weakened the health and strength of our people in the military to defend this country because of those unqualified, no exemptions mandates by the Biden administration and Secretary of Defense Austin to purge and punish anyone for who didn't want to have the objectives to the vax, even if they had strong religious convictions. Then in California, we noticed California is one of several states, blue states, that decided to basically create a tribunal. And they were going to monitor how many exemptions a doctor was issuing for patients who had potential medical complications. State of California basically said, doctors, you're only allowed 10 exemptions a year. 10, that's it. Doesn't matter if patient number 11 is in critically, would die if they had this vaccine, has serious immune issues, et cetera. Doesn't matter. You're only allowed to save 10. After that, they can't find a doctor, let them die. That's the policy of a tribunal that was not made up of medical experts, but by politicians and political edicts. In Florida, we have a powerful officer in Florida. In Palm Beach, there are 11,000 parents decide to opt their children out from being masked. We now know the long-term ramifications of that. It's not healthy mentally as well as physically in the immune system. Well, they were told by the school district that, no, we're going to force all kids to wear masks. So our attorney in our office there in out of Fort Lauderdale moved in on it, filed a lawsuit. Make a long story short, those parents' rights were all protected. Those kids were protected. And then we even gone to bat for business owners who, you know, in the terrible situation of, you know, being where they're told you have to vax your employees. And,
1 minute.
And so anyway, we at Pacific Justice stepped in, gave emergency counsel to business owners on how to deal with that so that people with convictions would not be fired. Bottom line, we're working very hard and we have great resources on our website, pji.org. We're a nonprofit 501c3. We do all our work without charge. Do not hesitate to contact us if you need assistance. We're here to help. We have a whole bunch of resources on the latest information dealing with COVID and how to specifically defend yourself from tyranny. That's what we're about at Pacific Justice Institute. And we're really excited to have attorneys such as Dave Peters, who heads up our office in Michigan, and he's been involved in some very exciting litigation.
Thank you very much, Brad. You know, I've commented many times in different forums that there are forces of good out there. And you, the people on this panel, prove that, because so many doctors and nurses and parents are so frustrated, they don't know where to turn. It's good to know that you exist and people like you exist. So thank you very much. And he just mentioned David Peters, who also works for the same firm, and he's up next. Attorney Peters, are you available?
I am available. I hope you can hear me.
Yes.
All right. So, as you say, my name is Dave Peters, the Michigan staff attorney for Pacific Justice Institute. I'm here because I have a medical and a legal background and an academic background. I spent 30 years practicing law. I'm currently practicing law. I've had over 100 trials, 25 jury trials. I have a master's degree from Wayne State School of Medicine in physiology and a PhD in medical sociology. I taught for 8 years. I published 14 academic papers, published 4 books, probably wrote about 10 books, but only published 4 of them. And then I was drawn back into the practice of law by Pacific Justice because of the work that they were doing. At Pacific Justice, we handle civil rights, parental rights, and religious liberty cases. And I managed to leverage my medical background to handle these medical cases that have come up because surprise, surprise, a lot of civil rights lawyers don't have a medical background. So nobody wanted to touch these transplant cases. And I believe I was one of the only attorneys in the whole country who brought multiple transplant cases. We sued, and just so you know, the transplant cases were individuals who were on the transplant list. They needed a solid organ. They were going to die. And they were removed from the list because they refused to take the COVID vaccine and raised a religious objection. And they were basically told they can die. And I want to tell you about the client at the University of Michigan. I want to talk about her the most. But we took on Trinity Health. We took on Mayo Clinic. We took on Cleveland Clinic. We took on the University of Virginia. And most of those have reversed themselves on the mandate. University of Michigan was one of the first, was the first large university hospital to reverse themselves on the mandate. So we're very happy about that. The clients are back on the transplant list at the University of Michigan. So we were able to save them. But I want to tell you about Katie. Katie Shire was our client, and she was on the list. She was number 2 on the list. Katie has 7% function in her heart. She's surviving only by a cardiac implant pump that's constantly infected. She is a devout Catholic. And all through 2021, she was on the list. And December 7th, she was notified, December 7th, 2021, she was notified, you're off the list because you refused to take the vaccine. And we talked, I basically told her, well, I mean, you're going to die if you don't get the vaccine. Maybe you should think about it. And she said, quote, I will never take any substance into my body that was derived from abortion research or research on aborted fetuses. I would rather be a martyr and I would rather die. And she would have died. Just for people who don't know, the COVID vaccine was developed under the Emergency Use Act. It was tested on the HEC 293 stem cell line that was derived from the eyeball socket of a 9-month-old aborted fetus killed without anesthesia. So to say there was a valid religious objection at the time she was raising it is putting it mildly. I've also had the fortune to successfully represent several physicians and nurses in the state of Michigan who were prosecuted by our governor, Governor Whitmer, and her licensing board for speaking about masks, failing to enforce mask mandates in their offices, and, of course, the greatest mortal sin that one can forget than commit of all, suggesting that the COVID vaccine might have side effects or is less than 100% effective. In Michigan, during COVID, our governor prosecuted over 400 physicians and nurses and threatened to take away their licenses to practice medicine, most for exercising their fundamental right of free speech. This problem is not confined to Michigan. It is nationwide, and it is an issue particularly in deep blue states. Last October, the state of California passed a law making it even easier to attack the fundamental rights of physicians who contradicted the current views and dogma of the California state executive branch. This so-called medical misinformation law was enjoined as vague by the federal Supreme Court, in part due to the work of some senior attorneys at the Pacific Justice Institute in collaboration with others. Unfortunately, all of us have had the misfortune of seeing the censorship of social media that has violated our constitutional rights, in particular the First Amendment to the U.S. Constitution. I think Curtis will correct me if I'm wrong, but the anti-vax community was really the first to be attacked, or one of the first to be attacked and censored. And yes. One of the physicians spoke earlier, she stole my thunder, because that poem was very prescient. They came for the anti-vaxxers first, and now they're coming for us. Because with the COVID pandemic, they accumulated their power and they unleashed that power on the people. And that people was the power, or that power rather, was the power to spy on every interaction, every email, every contact, and then coordinate with social media companies to suppress, censor, and unperson anybody who disagreed with the party line. They are using artificial intelligence algorithms designed to track down foreign terrorists and enemies of America intent on murdering thousands of people. The threat is no longer skyscrapers collapsing or the Pentagon exploding into flames, but now the threat is anybody who disagrees with the regime or the current party line. The threat is you. In short, the war on terror has come home. Hospitals, doctors, nurses, and medical clinics have been weaponized against the people in the same way social media companies were subverted. And to quote a number of elder statements, truth is the first casualty of war. And once you declare war, whether it's against a shadowy organization or a shadowy unspecified virus of unknown origin, then you must suppress the truth, because truth is the enemy of war. Because if 2 + 2 can equal 5, and they can censor anyone with a different opinion, then reality can be whatever the party says it is. Or, as Orwell put it in 1984, war is peace, freedom is slavery, and we have always been at war with coronavirus. How can we deal with this attack against our civilization and the fundamental rights that all of us hold dear? The answer is conferences like this that Curtis has put on for us. The answer is that we must be willing to cross party lines, cross theological lines, cross racial lines, economic lines, and come together with a common purpose. This issue is not about Republicans or Democrats or Trump or Biden or any of those idiots. Our common purpose must begin at the understanding of freedom of free speech, freedom of religion, and a common understanding of fundamental rights. People, the citizens of the world and American citizens, have fundamental rights, and those rights are given to us by God, the Almighty Creator, and that means they cannot be taken away by any government. That is the common theme that binds us in this issue. Going forward, we need to challenge the campaign of censorship, the prosecutions, the cancellations designed to chill the very fundamental rights that would have helped us in this difficult time.
1 minute.
The importance of protecting rights for all people, especially the right of free speech, the rights to your children, who are our children, not their children, and the right to decide what you will put in your body and the medical treatment that you will receive. Put simply, a top-down authoritarian style of government is no way to run a country. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Extremely powerful. And yeah, I'm just so glad that we have people on our side. Same is true at Children's Self-Defense, lots of lawsuits being filed. And it's great to know you guys are out there in this fight. To the group of the doctors and lawyers, or if there's a particular one that you want to target a question to, whatever works for you.
Okay, thanks. It's a real honor to be here with you very, very brave people. I'm the father of an adult son who, as an infant, was injured by vaccines. And I've been involved in vaccine rights struggles politically for the last 20 years. Currently, I am one of the founders of American Values 2024. It is a super PAC that is focusing on getting Robert F. Kane Jr. elected president. And I'm going to cheat a little bit here. I have two questions, which are sort of very closely related. So I thought maybe I could get away with it.
Not a problem. Feel free.
And my first question is, are there organizations of physicians working together to fight back? And related to that is, because I approach things politically, and what can ordinary people do to help protect our physicians? So, and Curtis, why don't you allocate it to...
No, I'll just throw it out to the group. Whoever would like to, whichever doctor or lawyer would like to respond, feel free. You raise your hand electronically or whatever, whoever wants to respond to that.
So, there is a group founded by Peter McCullough of physicians and other people that are united in trying to do research and discuss this issue.
Yeah, great. That's the C19 group and also FLCCC and the America Frontline Doctors. And Dr. Moon, you guys have a group also, right?
We yeah, also have
one at a time, Dr. Moon, and then Dr. Thor, feel free. Okay.
Yeah, there are multiple groups of physicians who have gathered to push back against this. We get phone calls very frequently from new physicians joining us as well, who are waking up to what's happening. So that's the brief answer to the first question. The second question about what can the average American citizen do? You know, I think we all have to realize we need to link arms with this, and the average American citizen who is not a physician, you're just as important to us, if not more important than we are. We need you to wake up your neighbors. We need you to wake up your family and friends. I realize it's hard. We all realize it's very hard to do that, but the time for being politically correct and polite as they roll over us with these horrible violations of our civil rights and free speech, those days are over. We need to start standing up to what's happening. So please, every day you need to be engaged in this fight by speaking out.
Thank you very much, Dr. Moon. Dr. Thorpe?
Yes, thank you, Curtis. There are many groups, and there are many parallel healthcare systems coming along. And I, for one, shortly after I was fired, allegedly for no cause, I joined the wellness company. And I would extend an invitation to every single one of you on this panel, especially the two that I've specifically communicated with, to please check us out and please consider come joining us. Listen, a message from my prior CEO, who fired me allegedly for being a model physician for no cause. Her name is Laura Kaiser. And the CEO that fired me was Kevin Elledge. And I want to ask you, Laura Kaiser and Kevin Elledge, this is a question. On the HHS and CDC website, I see that you accepted $135 million from the CDC and the HHS. So my question to you, Ms. Laura Kaiser and Kevin Elledge, was there a quid pro quo? Did you sign the covenant with death like we have proven that the American College of OBGYN did? And might that have come into your decision to fire me, your most productive physician in the department and the most published physician in the department? And one more comment. I can guarantee the American people that if you come over to our parallel healthcare system, when you ask the question, are you willing to give up your job to save my life? Everyone at the wellness company will honestly raise their hand and say yes. And I can tell you that my CEO, Mr. Peter Gulley, and my founder, Foster Colson, will never allow you to be terminated or browbeaten for speaking the truth. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Shabnam, I saw you had your hand up.
Yeah, thanks, Curtis. So I'm an activist, journalist, and lawyer from South Africa, founder of Transformative Health Justice, co-convener of the African Sovereignty Coalition, executive director of Children's Health Defense Africa, and steering committee member of the World Council for Health. Much of my focus has been around the World Health Organization, a contradiction in terms, since at least 2021 in the current chapter, and currently focusing my attention on the United Nations and the potential of sanctions, countries that do not comply with their dictates. My question was going to be for Dr. James Thorpe, and he's already touched on it. In fact, I've got a question for each of you, which is a good event, I'd say. But Dr. Thorpe, let me just follow up then on what you've just shared in terms of conflicts of interest. And so what you've just shared outlines conflict of interest in the most blatant and obscene way in terms of HHS and funding for your former employer. However, it's not that this hasn't always been happening. It's just that we're more aware and alert to the subject of conflict of interest now. What do you think needs to happen in this area of conflict of interest? Do you think more effective laws on transparency and accountability will help? And what does it mean for the future of medicine?
Great question. Thank you, Shabnam, for being here. And thank you for all that you do. I think we're all given a unique task to fight in this war from our Creator. And we all have different roles, as every single person is spoken to on this panel. So what I believe I'm charged to do is expose evil and expose clandestine covenants with death that we've been publishing and we have proven with our Freedom of Information Act. So everybody has a responsibility to speak truth. And when you speak truth, you get more confident and more peace from our Creator in speaking truth. Listen, that was a $13 billion PSYOPS campaign that the United States of America government purposely put out to kill my pregnant women, not just in the United States, but globally. This is what your government did. And this is what I want to expose. We've proved it. We just need to speak it out like Curtis and all of us are doing on this panel. Thank you.
Thank you. The other people who are on the panel for asking questions, I just want to go down the list and I'll just call on you afterwards. So we just want to make sure we get everybody get their first question in. And the next one on the list is Tricia Lindsay. Attorney Tricia Lindsay. Tricia, are you available? Are you there? Okay. I thought she was on the call. You might be on mute. Okay, great, great. Okay, feel free.
Hi. Good evening, everyone. Thank you all for being here. It's really an honor, really informative, and it's really good to see medical doctors that have stepped up to the plate and have answered the call of their Creator and has spoken up, because it's really an atrocity what's going on in our country and our world, as you all have all said on this line. My name is Attorney Tricia Lindsay. I'm a constitutional and civil rights attorney who has been fighting this fight since the beginning. I too have always questioned things that just didn't make sense, things that just looked a little strange since I was probably a child. And I've gotten myself in a little bit of trouble for it, but I count that as a trophy. And so this is a question. My questions kept changing as I was listening to everyone. And so I have a question for the medical doctors, which is kind of practical. And I find myself speaking to a lot of young people that were aspiring medical doctors before, and now they've pretty much put their lives on hold because they don't know what to do. They're looking, they're very knowledgeable and they're awakened and they realize what's going on. And so they don't want to be in the position whereby they're going to be forced to pretty much kill people in order to hold on to their licenses. And so they don't know what to do. And so I would ask, as this is a forum that's going to be put out there, and we have a next generation that's coming in, what would be your advice to these aspiring medical physicians, doctors, nurses?
I would like to say something, if I may.
Yep, feel free.
One of my most severely injured patients, a 17-year-old young lady, she got one Pfizer shot, and she was paralyzed in wheelchair and with daily multiple seizures. And fortunately, she found me, and she's pretty much seizure-free. And her study was pre-med. I thought for sure that she is not going to do it, especially she see what happened to me, to my practice, and to my license. And recently, she's on Children Health Defense, Mila. And she told me she's going to continue her study to be a medical provider. And I told her selfishly, hey, I'm telling my kids not going to medicine. It's you can invest $250,000. And nowadays it's not like 20 years ago. If I had don't agree with my attending, we could have heated discussions. At the end of the day, we are trying to discuss and trying to come up with best therapy for the patient. We may disagree with each other and then we move on, right? But nowadays, if you are not leaning towards the left and pretty much the radical left, if this is what the young people choose to do, I think we need to let them know and let them see what the reality is and not to sugarcoat it. I think we owe them at least that much.
Thank you very much. Does someone else want to respond to that particular question? I'll just speak up if you want. No? Okay.
No, I do. Go ahead. Okay. I would just echo that. I think to the young people who are thinking about a career in medicine, you know, the temptation is to run away, right? Please don't run away from your nation. Your nation and the American people need you. They need your ethics. They need your honesty. We need to rebuild trust with the public again. And so please don't run away. We need you now far more than ever. Okay. So please, please, this is your calling. And I would ask you to come join us.
Thank you. Dr. Thorpe, did you want to say something? I see your hand is up. No. Okay. Great. Thank you very much. Dr. Moon, I do have to agree with you. I think it's better that we have people on the inside than everybody's on the outside, and that you could, I know there are doctors and communicate with doctors all the time who do what they can in the best way they can when not walking a fine line to not drawing too much attention to themselves, but still doing things that actually make a difference in people's lives, as Dr. Hong and everyone else here has been doing. So we need people on the inside and not everybody on the outside, and good people on the inside. I hate to go into a hospital where everybody thought the same and only follow what they were dictated to. That would be a very scary place to go into. But in any event, thank you. Thank you, Tricia. Celso, are you there?
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes.
Good evening, everyone. My name is Celso Santiago. Tremendous honor to be with so many conscientious people here on this panel. Some of you I've listened to over the radio and YouTube. I'm just honored, really, really honored to be here tonight. I've been a community activist for over 13 years, and I've been putting a lot of that community activism strength into the struggle against the mandates, rallying, you know, screaming at the top of my lungs, making people aware of the dangers of these vaccines. I spoke out against these vaccines on my job. It made me sick to my stomach that the vaccines were brought into the facility where I worked for the caseloads that we had. I spoke out against that. They didn't listen to me. So I just want to ask very briefly, and this is a question across the board. Is there a database that's keeping track of how many doctors have lost their certifications because of not following the COVID protocols? And if so, are they united in a class action lawsuit, or are there any class action lawsuits, being put against the medical boards for these horrific crimes that they're doing?
All right. Anybody, Brad or David, do you think you want to respond to that, or whoever?
I'm not aware of any medical actions against the boards, other than I think one of the doctors here said he had filed one against the board. Our actions are primarily against employers, hospitals that fire a physician. It's an interesting issue, a class action, a national class action against all 50 medical boards. That would be a big case.
It would.
But the answer to the question is there is no national database. These are compiled state by state, and someone would have to go through all 50 states and add them together in order to compile a database. If somebody wanted to do something that, to help, that would be very useful.
Excellent. Anyone else like to respond to that? I think that's a great question, Sal. So I think you open up a really important door that maybe should be really investigated, because that's when you get to the root cause of what's going on. I mean, they're doing all the dictating. Anybody else would like to respond? Okay, then we'll move on. Charlene, are you ready?
Yes, thank you. Can you all hear me okay? Okay,
yes,
wonderful.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so I am a journalist, multimedia. I write for the Final Call newspaper as national correspondent. It's published by the Nation of Islam and the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. We've had a special section on COVID for the past few years, COVID-19. And the U.S. policy of depopulation. I also broadcast Liberated Sisters talk show on the Pacifica Network at KPFK Los Angeles, and have just become abreast of this whole issue surrounding injections through Dr. Andrew Wakefield, Dr. Thompson, the whistleblower, Dr. Brian Hooker, and others, Mr. Kennedy, when they brought the issue of the MMR shots to the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan and our student Western Regional Minister, Abdul Malik Saeed, formerly Brother Tony Muhammad, has been a champion in just making us very aware of what's happening. And so thank you for the opportunity. I second what all of the other panelists said about wanting to be here and the honor. So my question to everyone, the group of doctors and attorneys, is the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan has said in a recent address entitled Swan Song, quote, "Before the vaccine was made, I warned us in the name of Allah that this was a death plot. The way to get rid of 2 to 3 billion people is to offer you a vaccine," unquote. Now, seeing that the whole medical American society is lined against the science, it has to be depopulation. Wouldn't you agree?
Okay, open the floor up for anybody who wants to respond.
I think that whether it was intentional or by accident, this dual use of concern, this dual research of concern approach to gain a function, which the origin of this is a bioweapon, or a, you know, in their eyes at least, a possible therapeutic. But that's what they created. And so depopulation is an inevitable consequence of what they did. I think, you know, I was persuaded of the depopulation agenda by the film I made with Bobby Kennedy on infertility vaccines in developing countries such as Kenya, which were dressed up as neonatal tetanus prevention programs. So the mothers were completely lied to by the World Health Organization, the Gates Foundation, and others. So it is entirely possible that there is a deliberate depopulation agenda, but I'm not quite there yet. I don't know. And when, you know, as people say, when you don't know, one has to explore the possibility rather than making some kind of didactic statement about this is what it is. There's certainly a great deal of suspicion, though.
Thank you, Doc.
Very much. Yeah, I will say this. The Final Call has been on the front lines of all the Black newspapers and media out there. They're the only ones who've consistently been warning about the dangers of the COVID shot. Now, I've been doing this kind of research for many years, so I knew the COVID shot was dangerous before it even actually came on the market. In fact, I was in an interview with Dr. Dave Raznick, and in that interview, I said I felt this vaccine was going to kill potentially billions of people. And his first response was, not billions, maybe hundreds of millions. Couldn't have been more than a few weeks later that Dr. Raznick got back to me and said, Curtis, I think you're right. unless we do something, this thing can kill billions of people. And so that issue has been on the plate for a very long time, what the intentions are. But I will give praise to the final call. I mean, almost every issue for a past year or two, they've had almost half a page saying in bold letters, do not take the COVID vaccine. I mean, no wishy-washy, nothing. And you look at the other Black newspapers out there, general media as well, but particularly the Black community, none of them are doing that. They're actually all in favor. Oh, go get vaccinated. And they get all kinds of commercials. Well, you know, in times of crisis, you can easily know who your friends are and who are your potential enemies. And I have to say, the Final Call newspaper has proved that they'll stick by what they think is right, no matter what the consequences. So I just want to give you praise for having that courage. And Sister Shirley Muhammad has also been very receptive when I've referred doctors and others to her and getting them in her paper. They've even had devoted time to Mr. Bobby Kennedy and allow him to communicate his thoughts. And so I have to give praise for what all of you are doing there.
Brother Curtis, if I may say thank you, not my paper. I know what you mean. I just want to make sure the publisher is Minister Farrakhan, but also it's four pages, and we've even sometimes had six pages because it's just so crucial. But thank you very much. And that's at finalcall.com for anyone interested.
In fact, they even published like two full pages, an article that I wrote based on what I've learned from Dr. Thorpe and others about the dangers of giving experimental COVID vaccines to pregnant women. They devoted two whole pages. I didn't know if they was going to publish it or not, but they did. They had the courage to do that. So praises to the Final Call newspaper. Anyone else would like to
respond? Can I just say one thing, which is a sort of supplement to what I was saying earlier, that one thing that really, really does need explanation is why in Australia were the Pfizer employees provided with a completely different batch of the vaccine to the rest of the population? That really raises one's suspicions when you hear that kind of thing. What possible motive could there have been for doing that if you did not know that what you were doing to the remaining population was somehow implicitly more dangerous than, you know, it would be for the vaccine that you're prepared to give to your employees? That
in Denmark as well.
Wow. Well, Curtis, may I have 3 seconds?
Feel free.
In a follow-up question, I do want to raise that when we get to that portion, to be fair for the timing, in terms of the reports of the three different levels of shots, you know, the placebos going to different places and not the one shot that was actually debilitating. So I'll pick that up, but I just wanted to mention that.
Right. Thank you very much. Carla, are you ready to ask your question?
Hello. Hi, my name is Carla Finley, and like everyone says, it's such a great honor to be here, and I just want to express my apologies for what you had to endure, but I'm just thankful for your courage. What do you think can make a positive impact on getting people to really wake up?
Yeah, I'd like to respond if I might.
Sure.
This is Brad Dacus. I think information about your rights as a parent, especially when dealing with public schools, is so important. You know, we have customized for, I think, 41 states, opt-out forms dealing with numerous issues, customized not only federal law, but the state laws and state statutory rights of parents to opt out of different things and children are exposed to or dealing with in public schools. And as far as whenever parents, they're often told false information by school districts saying, well, you have no right, you have to have the child vaxxed. That's an ultimatum. In reality, that's not always the case. And so I encourage people to look at our resources and to contact us at any time. We've got a huge footprint across the country for that reason, to make sure that people, parents, get the help that they need when dealing with these kinds of issues. They're outnumbered, they're outgunned, and unless they know that there's an avenue where they can get that kind of representation and assistance, they're just walked all over, and which is tragic. So that's my two cents. And also, I encourage people out there to let others know about risks. So many people are still getting boosters, and it's partly because people aren't speaking out. I encourage people to to speak out and provide information and provide articles and things like the British Medical Journal, et cetera, that really lays it out, the risks involved. It's tragic when we're silent and we see people die, and we know it's something that we possibly could have prevented by speaking out and informing them.
Great. Thank you very much. Anyone else care to address that question? Okay, we're going to move into the last segment, which hopefully we'll wrap up shortly.
Dr. Thomas wanted to say something. He raised his hand.
Yeah.
Cool. Mm-hmm. Okay, Phil. Yeah, Dr. Thomas. Well,
all right. My data showed quite clearly that even a delayed schedule is harmful. So sadly, if you are in California, New York, Maine, West Virginia, or Mississippi, you have no ability to avoid fully vaccinating to have access to school. So that means your options, if you want to protect your kids, and I'm presuming that's what most parents who start waking up to the risks want to do, if you're in one of those five states, you homeschool or you move. I mean, that's really your only choice. Medical exemptions are no longer a reality. Any physician that writes one will lose their license. So you probably will not be able to find such a physician. As far as I think your question was asking about how do we educate others and inform others, that's what we're all about. You watch shows like this that Curtis is putting on. You get to Children's Health Defense and the Daily Defender and, you know, all the shows, Highwire, With the Wind that I produce, there are tons of opportunities of places to get good information. Mm-hmm. But, you know, if you're not medical, talk to your neighbor, talk to your friend, talk to, you know, it's heroic to go up to a friend who is all in on the vaccines and try to have a conversation because they don't want to hear it. But we have to be brave and do that.
Right. Real quick comment also on that. A little tweak, and I agree with everything that was just said. In California, there is an exemption for religious exemption for those vaccines that were officiated after 2015, which includes the COVID-19 vaccinations. But those that were prior to that, which are almost all of them, absolutely, there's no opt-out afforded, unfortunately, in the state of California.
Great. Okay, we're going to roll to the segment where people can ask general questions. My goal is to wrap this up within 2 hours or less. We're almost reaching that point. So try to make your questions to the point and try to avoid a speech, even though there's great information, but we want to try and wrap up as soon as we can. So whoever remaining has a question or a second or third question, feel free. Just raise your hand or wave to me or whatever. Okay, Charlene?
Thank you. So one of the questions I have, can you hear me?
Oh, wait a minute, I'm sorry, I made a huge mistake. I'm sorry, it's not you, Lori. Lori is also, she's not only our hammer, she's also supposed to ask a question. As soon as she finishes, we'll go right to you, Charlie. My apologies. Lori, feel free to ask your question.
Hi, Curtis, thank you. And like everyone else said, it's such an honor to be here and to witness all of your courage and to be fighting this fight with you all. So Lori Whetstone, I'm a U.S. Army veteran, a single mom, an entrepreneur, and I'm currently a success strategist of my own business called Holistic Wellness Design. So my question revolves around, I seem to be hearing a lot of folks that still believe in the narrative are all now coming down with COVID again for the third or the fourth or the fifth time. Of course, all of these folks have all had shots, boosters, and gosh knows, you know, what number they're on. How do we communicate with these folks? Because it seems that everyone has been trained that at the first sign of a sniffle, that you run out and test yourself, right? So people have probably stacked up in their homes, God knows how many tests, right? So they test themselves and all of a sudden, oh my goodness, they have COVID. Now they've got a quarantine. Now you can't do anything. I mean, what do we do about this?
People want to respond.
Yeah, a real quick one. Teach them about ivermectin. They can have a supply at home. They never need to test again if they think they have a really severe case of COVID, go on a short course of ivermectin, you're all set.
Okay. And again, we don't recommend specific things, but, you know, that's fine.
That's right. I'm sorry. That's what I might do, hypothetically speaking.
Okay. Shabnam?
Thanks, Curtis. Mm-hmm. Lots of questions, so I'm trying to summarize here. My next one's going to be for Daniel and Brad, and that's around the subject of GMO. I was quite surprised to hear Daniel said that he was dissuaded from talking about reverse transcription. I recently interviewed attorneys Julian Gillespie and Katie Ashby-Coppins from Australia on a case they're taking against a regulator for the manufacturers such as Pfizer and Moderna not having got license for GMO products, essentially, the contamination aside. Are you aware of other cases that are being pursued in other parts of the world? And do you have a perspective on whether that is an important enough angle to be tackled in every country around the world, the fact that these are GMO products? Oh, no, it's not about batches. It's the fact that these C19 shots, at least some of them, have there's evidence to suggest that they include genetically modified organisms or are, in fact, GMO. And no license has been sought from the regulator. And so now I'm starting to do interviews with lawyers on the subject, on that particular subject, as a line of attack, that there was no license for these GMO products. And I heard Daniel talk earlier about reverse transcriptions. I thought it's a question he might want to comment on as well, because I think it's an important line of attack and it needs collaboration between doctors and lawyers to take it forward.
I can answer that question.
Oh, go ahead, doctor.
A study by Hannah and colleagues published in JAMA 1 year ago clearly showed that the intact pseudo-uridinated mRNA, the man-made mRNA, gets injected in your arm, lipid nanoparticle goes to a cell. The cell repackages it in its own innate packaging material that we'll call a lysosome or an exosome. And then it's reshed into the body and it could go to every single cell in the body, including all of the exocrine glands. They reported the mammary gland. It is entered into the mammary cell that produces milk, and it is excreted intact in an exosome or lysosome in breast milk. So that means that every other gland in the body, exocrine gland, sweat, semen, vaginal secretions, cervical secretions, prostatic secretions, semen, nasal dripping, saliva, everything, maybe even coughing, will potentially cause the same issue. Coughing out, possibly transfecting, transinoculating multiple people by the excretion of these exosomal intact RNA, man-made RNA.
You know, if I could add on to that, is once you're dealing with genetic manipulation, you're now dealing with a species-changing event. And when you have a species-changing event, you can also have a biosphere or entire ecosystem changing event. Because look at it from this perspective. Just as Dr. James Thorpe was saying that this mRNA gene, transfected gene, can be excreted through exosomes and shed into the environment. Do we know if other organisms can pick up this spike protein gene, like ants, centipedes, cats, dogs, birds? We don't know. This is like the scale of this disaster has never been seen before in this epoch of human history.
Yeah, I just want to comment. I at a presentation at a forum I organized years ago, I don't know, she's close to 20 years ago, Reverend Al Sharpton, I raised this very issue with genetically modified organisms being placed in vaccines and the food and everything else. And I warned that this could be, like you've just indicated, a species-changing event. I mean, if this stuff is not stopped, we don't know what the definition of a human being might be 20, 30 years from now. Tricia, I think I see your hand up.
Hi, Curtis. I have two quick questions. Well, hopefully they're quick. One set for the attorneys and another one for the doctors. For Brad and David, what do you find with you litigating across the country with these various cases? What do you find is a common threat that's a challenge in all the courts, no matter what state that you go into? And then what is your greatest strategy that you found has worked no matter where you go, if there is one that exists?
Yeah, I'll go first. A common denominator that we see is it's a complete devaluation of employers, specifically from HR, being very dogmatic and actually discriminatory and prejudicial against people of faith. We have them accommodating those seeking a medical exemption, and then on one hand, on the other hand, saying, oh, but if you have a religious exemption, we're not going to accommodate that. We're not going to afford you that. And yet religious exemption for constitutional legal purposes is entitled to the highest level of scrutiny and protection. So we see a real blatant disrespect for religious freedom and tolerance in a very hypocritical way. We even see many examples where employers have arbitrarily said, well, these executives people, yeah, we'll accommodate you. People over here that are not executives or in a different division of the company, we're not going to accommodate you without even a rational basis to support it, much less a compelling interest. And so that's what we've seen. And I will say that recent case law, because of coming out of the, I guess we'll say the postal worker case, is going to greatly help us in our litigation. It's already helping us where it says employers, you can't just show mere inconvenience to justify not accommodating someone with a religious objection to the COVID-19 vaccine. You have to show a substantial cost or expense. And we're starting to see our cases settling. We still have more cases coming in than going out, but we've definitely seen an increase in cases settling, and we're very optimistic moving forward.
Fantastic. Thank you.
Thank you.
Did he answer? I think you said you had a second question, or did you already present it?
Let me move, because it's going to end up being three. It's okay. For the doctors, and this is for me, it's a radical question. I don't know. Well, it's not that radical. It's just who I am. I'm not sure how deep down the rabbit hole you all are gone. But for me, it seems we talk about vaccine injury a lot, and we do mention the deaths. But I find that when we're talking about cases going into court and doctors testifying, it's more surrounding vaccine injury and things of that nature. Well, I and a few colleagues of mine have crossed the line and are now looking to hold institutions and certain doctors liable for murder, because to us, once you have used a certain protocol and a certain regimen, it just only makes sense that if you see that you're doing the same thing over and over and patients are dying, there comes a time where it crosses the line. And now, you know, going into that hospital room, if you give this patient that is demonstrating same symptoms, they're whatever they're dealing with is manifesting the same way as the last 50 patients that you just use the same protocol on. Now, this is no longer just negligence, but when does it cross the line to intent? And I just wonder, you know, your thoughts around that, because we're looking at hospital documentation for patients and when, you know, that line was crossed, and looking to hold institutions and certain physicians responsible, accountable for intentional death.
Tricia, I'll take that question.
Thank you. I thought you would.
Yeah. So thank you so much for joining us. And here's what I posit and how I approach this is exactly with my opening statement, and go blast out what I know to be true. And here's what I know to be true, that on February 28th, 2021, the Pfizer 5.3.6 document that was the 10-week rollout of the Pfizer legally mandated rollout data follow-up was actually available to HHS, CDC, and it was the deadliest drug ever rolled out. They knew that. Of course, they knew it. They tried to bury it for 75 years. And then Deputy Secretary Assistant Mark Weber of HHS knew it. He tried to hide it for 75 years. What's he do? Does he tell the truth to the world? No. He lies, and he turns around and gives $13 billion of our tax money to broadcast to the American people and 300 organizations, highly influential organizations, to sign a covenant with death to state that it's effective, safe, and necessary in pregnancy, not just to the United States, to the whole world. That is murder. That is genocide. It's not just a hospital that needs to be accountable. It's the government. We are corrupt. They're terminally captured by corporate kleptocrats, and they need to be taken down.
Legally, in court. Yes.
In court, absolutely. There are statutes on the books that address these things. It's just no one has really stepped up to do it, but there are a couple of colleagues that are looking to do that. And so I just wanted to hear your take on it, because, you know, not many people are willing to step forward. There's always a line, you know, where people will pull back from, but I think it's time to cross that line, and we're getting to that point.
Yeah, Dr. Thorpe, I want to thank you for, I want to thank you for being honest and unafraid to say what you just said. It needs to be said, because I know there are lots of people who are aware of this systematic murdering of patients in the hospitals who are terrified of going to the into a hospital, literally terrified because of what they know. And I'll just share a real fast story. It's just so important. I've worked with the Hasidic community for a lot of events, and so they've shared things with me. And one of the stories that, was shared with me was of an elderly Hasidic Jewish gentleman who passed away in the hospital. And they later went through his clothing and found he had a note in there, but it was in Yiddish, so nobody there could understand it. But later they found the note, it was given to a person who could read Yiddish. And it said that, "I did not die of COVID. The hospital murdered me." And there are a lot of stories. One fast story, one more. I was told of a case where a gentleman in the hospital was being dehydrated. I've heard lots of accounts of that. They're not giving them fluids, not giving them food. This individual had to crawl to the toilet to drink water, and then he had enough strength to escape the hospital. So a lot of people are afraid of the hospital, and that's not the way hospitals are supposed to be. That's supposed to be a place where you have caring, highly intelligent people who are looking after your best interest, not people on the take and engaged and be our accomplices, as far as I'm concerned, to murder, based on everything I've hearing. But I'm sorry. Next person, we'll wrap it. Let's say 2-3 more questions, then we'll wrap it up, call it a night. Who else has a question? I don't see. Shabna, your hand is still up. Dr. Moon, your hands are still up.
This is going to be my last question, but I'm happy for Dr. Moon to go first. Okay, I can go after her. Go ahead.
Dr. Moon?
I just wanted to expand for a moment on what Dr. Thorpe was saying. Many of these hospital administrators, right, have no medical degree, yet have been practicing medicine by forcing the physicians to act in certain ways. And we have documentation of physicians who have been threatened unless they say the word safe and effective when it comes to this mRNA product. They've been threatened with job loss and have, in fact, lost their jobs when they have refused to do the bidding of these hospital administrators, again, who have no medical license. So I would just remind everyone that world history reminds us that, you know, there's that quote, "I'm just doing my job. I'm just doing my job," right? How many people are out there right now just doing their job? Those are the people we're talking to here. Please look at what's happening. Please step away from that job. Your job is harming people, and you cannot be part of that huge process. That's how we make this stop. So that's my message.
Thank you very much. Very important message as well. Shabnan?
Thanks, Curtis, and everyone. So my last question, I was going to ask it to just the lawyers, but I'm going to open it up. So the WHO, clearly we know, is acting as an extension of the pharmaceutical and or banking cartel. And part of their weaponry includes amendments to the international health regulations and a proposed new pandemic treaty. Now, there are various initiatives and advocacy efforts across the world, which is really fantastic to see. And I know for a fact the WHO is threatened, which is part of why the UN has now stepped in. And my analysis is that sanctions are certainly on the horizon for countries that refuse to comply, which is essentially a power grab. My question, apart from HR 79 in the US, which is a bill to exit and defund the WHO, what kind, and I'm also drafting a bill for African countries, in fact, to exit as well. What kind of other initiatives do we know of in your part of the world to really drive a stake into the heart of this military medicine industrial complex that you can share with us and that we can collaborate on?
Whoever would like to respond. You can speak up, because otherwise I have to go back and forth on the screen. Nobody wants to come right now. Okay, we can address that question, I guess, another time. Sometimes the questions are really intense, and everybody may not be prepared to deal with some of the questions, but it's okay. I think we have the last question here. David Peters, feel free.
Yeah, I just want to say I'm not sure that the World Health Organization is the problem. They're being funded by somebody, and we're a lot closer to that entity that is funding them. The United States is the primary funding for this group. It's my understanding that WHO has done a lot of good things in terms of ending the vaccine mandate for children and things like that, that our government was unwilling to do. And I'm wondering, and I suspect, that the bad things are coming from our government, not from the United Nations.
Wow.
Well, I must agree with you in one point that the funders, and of course the captured member state delegates, are a serious problem, but they're using the WHO as a conduit. And so certainly we can't do any worse than, thank you, Celso, for that note, than the WHO. And I keep asking this question since the very beginning of 2020, asking doctors, what would you do differently the next time the WHO announces a pandemic? And the light just went off. So I'm hoping we're closer in that journey of exit and developing parallel alternative real health systems. Fantastic. Thank you.
I'm fine.
Okay, Charlene.
Okay, thank you. To the attorneys, very quickly, could you speak to the new medical billing codes that are reporting people that are unvaccinated, fully unvaccinated or not fully vaccinated? And what recourse do people have? Like, where is this headed?
Wow, that's an important question.
Well, I think we know where it's headed.
Yeah.
we've talked about it and alluded to it. And that's, it's all part of, you know, you look at the Bible, the mark. These are, that's what's going on. They are accumulating data on every person. And all they need to do is look at your electronic record. They say, I mean, I walk into the hospital, they say, oh, you haven't had your booster. Yeah, that's right, I haven't.
Yeah, well, we just defeated the database bill here in New York back in June. We've been fighting against that bill for the past few years, and they tried to sneak it in. But fortunately, CSD New York, we came up with a strategy. We only had 1 week, and we rallied in front of New York State Senator Gustavo Rivera's office. And everybody was really doubtful about our chances of success, since he's one of the sponsors of this bill that was going to start tracking people and basically take away our medical freedoms medical privacy. And so we rallied. We had a digital truck in front of his building denouncing this attack on our privacy. We had people going up to his office say, what the heck are you trying to do? And we were there for 3 days. And I think we shook him up enough that when it came time to vote that week, he didn't even bring it up for a vote. So we won.
Curtis, I'm so sorry to interrupt, but before we do that, can I ask you to please share an update with us on Stop the Quarantines, the post-quarantines campaign?
Okay, yeah, real briefly. New York has been trying to impose quarantine camps on New York. Is anybody who's looked at quarantine camps in China? They're horrific. I mean, they could lock you into a small room someplace and you can't leave until they say so. They can snatch up anybody for any reason, any bogus medical belief they might have. When you were at a party someplace and somebody tested positive, so you got to go into this quarantine camp. It's a total attack on our rights. Unfortunately, we have attorney Bobby Ann Cox, who successfully, with our support here at Children's Self-Defense, was able to defeat that bill, which outraged Governor Hochul in New York and Attorney General Tisha James. We defeated them. And then they waited 8 months and just a few hours before the deadline to file an appeal. And so we basically have to go back to court in September. It's going to be held up in Rochester, New York. And one of the things that Bobby Ann said will help is we can have as many people as possible up there in Rochester during the court date to impress upon the court that this is a serious issue that the public is concerned about. So I know most of the public is not aware of this, even though we've been having rallies and putting up flyers and everything else. But I can guarantee you, if we lose this, which hopefully we won't, everybody can be quickly aware when they start snatching up people and throwing them in these quarantine camps. You have no rights. They don't have to prove you have anything, and they can keep you as long as they want, and you're going to be forced to take whatever food, drinks, or medications that they say if you ever want to get out of there. So thank you for raising that issue, Sharpen. I know you've been active on that issue as well. And we, as I've mentioned before, I'm Curtis Koss, and this event is going to be on my Substack as well as other platforms. And also, you can help, because when you get the links, if you can share the link with your networks, it'll get out much further. And so with that, I just want to thank everybody for being here.